This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today in Sochi, there's been some hockey, the short program in the ladies' figure skating, men's giant slalom, women's bobsled, just to name a few. And we're going to spend a while now talking about the games with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, as we do most Wednesdays. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Meghna.
It's great to see you. Now, Bill, before we dive in, a couple of things. Listeners, we might have a spoiler or two or three during the show today, and I never want to tell people to turn away from their radios.
No, no.
But we might have a spoiler or two, and if we do, I'll just tell you to plug your ears if you don't want to know what the results are. That darned 8-hour difference between here and Russia, or Sochi, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I also want to use Carrie as a little test case here about the game. So bear with me, Bill, for another second here. Okay. Carrie, what's been your favorite Olympic moment so far?
Oh, that's really easy. That's Meryl Davis and Charlie White with the blonde hair winning the gold in ice dancing earlier this week. What about you, Meghna?
Well, first of all, that was a beautiful moment. Yeah. But I have to admit, I actually have seen most of the games so far when I was away in London last week. So I was watching it through the eyes of the British public, which is an interesting experience. Mm. And one of my favorite moments was when a British commentator watched Shaun White not at his best, saying kind of aghast and shocked, "Shaun White is human after all." I mean, it was really amazing. But really, I have to say my favorite moment so far has been the women's ski jumping. First time in the Olympics. The competition was awesome. And the emotion of German Karina Voigt and when she captured the gold, it was overwhelming. It was just wonderful to see her efforts and all of those athletes' efforts really come to fruition at the games. Mm-hmm. So that was my favorite moment. And Carrie, what has your family been watching?
So my family's been watching a combination of sort of the old, like the skaters doing their triple axels and twizzles and lutzes, and then the new sort of more X game style stuff, like the slope style snowboarders doing their flippity flippity. That's my technical term, the flippity floppity thing.
No, it's not.
From twizzles to McTwists or whatever they're called.
Yes.
Okay, so Bill, so that was what I was wondering. It seems as if, you know, we've seen a dozen new events at these games, most of them born in the X Games, and they've really been taking center stage, but still those old favorites like ice skating are drawing crowds. And this is the combination, it seems, that the IOC and broadcasters, for quite frankly, have been hoping for. So a success on that front?
Well, I think the Olympics always should be have something for everyone. And these games have had something for everyone in terms of the events involved. And I have enjoyed the snowboarding where six people go off at once and the so-called incidental contact is allowed. And the incidental contact is the contact that sends some people sailing completely off the course and into oblivion and never to finish the race at all. So, I mean, that's pretty entertaining stuff, you know, for an old guy.
Or even the not so old.
Yeah.
I mean, incidental being more than just incidental. Well, listeners, we want to hear from you. We're talking with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, about the Winter Games so far. I want to know what your favorite highlight of the games have been this year so far. What sports are you looking forward to watching? What sports do you wish haven't been included in these games? And as always, there's the big question about the meaning of the Olympics themselves. Do they have meaning beyond sport and athletics? Call us with your impressions. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, Bill, I'd also like to introduce from Sochi into this conversation, Shira Springer, sports reporter for the Boston Globe, who's there at the games reporting. Shira is joining us via Skype. Are you there, Shira?
I am. How are you doing?
Great. Yeah, we're doing great. Great to have you. First of all, tell us, what has today been like in Sochi?
Well, I've been up in the mountains today, and it's been incredibly busy. I was at the men's giant slalom this afternoon watching Ted Ligety, spoiler alert, win gold. And then I hustled my way down the mountains and then back up and over again to the Sankey Sliding Center to watch the finals of the women's bobsled.
What has the condition been like out on the mountains? Because I know that the conditions of the course has been, you know, kind of an issue throughout these games.
Yeah, it has been. The weather has been extraordinarily warm, making for slushy snow. But I have to say, today was, at least in my opinion, by far the best day that we've had up here. And even the skiers were complimenting the conditions, though it did get a little warm and sunny in the afternoon. It was a beautiful day, partly cloudy, around freezing, which is actually rare at these Winter Olympics. And everything seemed to be holding up well. The snow on the slopes and the ice in the luge bobsled complex. Mm.
We'll talk to you about bobsledding a little more in just a bit. But listeners, again, that was one of those spoilers to plug your ears because
too late.
I know. But I was just going to repeat it. American Ted Ligety takes the gold in the men's giant slalom. Your thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, before we get to that, I want to ask Shira a question,
sure.
If I might. Were you surprised, Shira, that after the Russian men lost in the quarterfinals, the entire Olympics didn't shut down?
I was surprised. You know, that there have been many depressed Russians wandering around here. They're a bit apoplectic about the loss and what's happened. That was sort of their big event, what they were really gearing up to. It was drawing the biggest crowds. When you went, you know, by the Bolshoi Arena where they play the ice hockey games before a Russian contest, there was the longest queue you'd see. It sort of wrap its way, you know, from the arena around a good portion of the Olympic Park as they, you know, in one of the rare occasions where the Russian fans actually showed up early and en masse to watch an event. They've had a habit of, at least early in the game, showing up on the later side. But yeah, I was a bit surprised that things sort of didn't come to a screeching halt.
Yeah, exactly. We spoke earlier on Only a Game to Michael Farber of Sports Illustrated. Here's what he had to say about how important hockey, men's hockey, was to Mr. Putin and everybody else there.
There really has been a Cold War vibe about everything associated with Sochi. And part of it is Vladimir Putin wanting the games to show that Russia is a modern nation and a great nation, and sports, especially hockey, is an expression of that.
Does greatness mean you have to get beyond the quarterfinals?
Well, greatness was supposed to mean they win a gold medal.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talked to Farber at one point, he said, as far as Vladimir Putin is concerned, if the Russian men win a gold medal in hockey, the Olympics is a success. If they don't, it isn't.
Yeah.
And you don't get any medals for losing in the quarterfinals, even a wooden one.
Well, I want to talk about another moment in hockey that actually happened several days ago because it's just still so jaw-dropping, and that was that epic, endless penalty shootout between the Russian men and the Americans. I mean, Bill, I have never seen anything like that.
Well, I've never seen it where the same guy gets to take all the penalty shots. That was pretty cool. The coach was just saying, I got my guy, and I'm sending him out there again.
Well, he wasn't doing too badly.
He did very well. He won the game, so that was exciting.
I mean, and Shira, I mean, I don't know if you were able to see that game in all your reporting that you've been doing, but that was a pretty incredible event.
It was. I wasn't at that game live, but let me tell you, I believe every single television station in Russia was tuned to that game, so it was hard to miss. I was seeing it on screens all over the place. And, you know, every time there was a good or a bad play, you would hear either a cheer grow up, and you could hear it all around, or, you know, if there was a bad play, a groan go out. And, I mean, it was, you really had the sense that the whole entire, at least all of Sochi, but it seemed like the whole entire country was tuned into that contest and hanging on every second of play.
Probably from Sochi to Siberia. I'm guessing that most of Russia was watching that game. But let's stick with hockey and the truly, like I think every year, more and more exciting sport of women's hockey that's been going on.
Thank you for saying that.
Well, I think it's fantastic to watch. And Shira, you've done a lot of great reporting on this. And first of all, give us a look ahead as to where the women stand and what we might be able to look forward to in the gold medal match between America and Canada tomorrow.
Well, it's going to be very, very interesting. These are the two big rivals in women's hockey. And in the preliminary round, the Canadians beat the Americans. And quite frankly, the Americans simply didn't show up, or at least all the players didn't show up. It was an uncharacteristically poor game for the Americans. And this, you know, necessitated their longest game film session of the season. They watched film of everything they did wrong for about 45 minutes. They had three tough days of practice to get back on track, regroup, refocus. And then they came out and they just dominated Sweden in the semifinals in really, really impressive fashion. So I think what you're going to see with Canada and the U.S. are two teams absolutely on the top of their games, and really each of them have something to prove. Obviously, the Americans want to prove that, you know, the preliminary game loss was a fluke and that they are finally going to win a gold medal for the first time since they won one when at the 1998 Nagano Games when women's hockey made its Olympic debut. Meanwhile, the Canadians, since the 1998 Nagano Games, have absolutely dominated in the Olympic tournament. They have won every gold medal since, and they'd like to keep that streak going.
I think it's worth mentioning that, the whole idea of great rivalries between women's team sports clubs is fairly new. Mm-hmm. I mean, women haven't been playing ice hockey seriously for all that long, and there's been an explosion of ice hockey teams on college campuses across this country. Lots of those college campuses bringing goalkeepers especially, but other players as well, over from Europe to play and to go to school there. And now we have this spectacular rivalry. I think it's as good as any rivalry that the Olympics has to offer at this point.
And sure.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, though, the one caveat to that, and it's sort of a kind of something that gets talked about at every either post-game press conference for Canada or post-game press conference for the U.S., is that the only real true rivalry in women's hockey, and you might be able to put Sweden and Finland in a true rivalry category too, but really the two teams that keep fighting it out for the titles are the U.S. and Canada. And there is some concern, there has been some concern, that there is still a lack of parity in the women's game, and it's something they're trying to work on. It was a question that the Swedish assistant coach, Leif Bork, was asked repeatedly about. What does it mean that the U.S. and Canada are always meeting for these championships? And he said, quite funnily, he goes, I think it's good. It's not, the Americans, I believe he said something like, the Americans should not be to blame for being good.
Well, let me ask you though, Shira, because I think you mentioned something to this effect in one of your pieces about exactly this issue. No one asks the Dutch why they keep their 9,000th speed skating medal, right? I mean, like, why is this an issue in women's hockey when dominance is not an issue in any other sport on the men's side?
It's an issue because, in part, some members of the IOC leadership mentioned it. They were worried about the parity or lack thereof in women's hockey. I think it's, you look at speed skating, it's an individual sport on many levels. I mean, there are individual competitors who have individually good people from the Netherlands, whereas the idea is that you want to have many countries in an Olympic hockey tournament who have a shot to have gold, and that there are upsets and it's exciting and they worry. I mean, it's very predictable. I mean, by the time that the preliminary round started, everybody was saying, just wait, just wait, just wait until the gold medal game. It'll be the U.S.-Canada.
Bill, do you buy that?
Yeah, I buy it in a sense. I think I view it with ambivalence as I view a lot of the Olympics, especially Olympics held under the thumb of Vladimir Putin. But, I agree with what Shira just said, that the Finland coach said. You can't blame teams for being good, and you can't blame Canada for being dominant or the U.S. for being the only team that ever knocks them off. And I don't see a problem there. The other teams will eventually reach a higher level and be competitive with the U.S. and Canada, and I think that it'll be fun to see it happen.
Well,
and the interesting thing I was going to say is that part of the irony is that it will be the U.S. and the U.S. college system that will really help parity in women's hockey. The more players that come over from Europe and play in American colleges, the better the caliber of women's hockey internationally is going to be. And then you have to start thinking about some type of professional league so that these players can improve their skills post-college.
Bring it on, I say. That would be terrific. We're speaking with Shira Springer. She's a reporter for the Boston Globe, reporting from Sochi and the Olympic Games in Russia. She's joining us via Skype. Staying up late for Radio Boston, I appreciate it very much. And Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, and we are talking about the Winter Olympics so far, the ups, the downs, the golds, the silvers, the bronzes, the last place finishes. What's been your favorite moment of the Olympic Games so far? Your least favorite moment? And what do you make of what Bill said, that maybe you have to glance a skeptical eye over any of these games that are, quote, under the thumb of Vladimir Putin? What do the Winter Olympics mean to you? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-8255. talk. We've got a tweet here, which you can tweet us at Radio Boston, by the way, from Boston Radio Girl. I think I might love that handle. Tweets that her favorite moment was Ted Ligety winning the gold today in the men's giant slalom.
Do I get to say that he went down the hill Ligety split? I mean, nobody said that yet, right?
No, and perhaps there was a reason why. although, Bill, I will give you full credit for having the courage to have said that. Let's move on to the women's bobsled, because Shira, you were there today. Again, ladies and gentlemen,
I'm still here.
You're still there.
I'm still here.
Fingers in your ears if you don't want spoilers, because that event is wrapped up. And what happened?
The U.S. won, sled one placed second, and the USA sled two placed third. So a silver and bronze out of bobsled, with the Canadians pushing ahead, or you know, sprinting ahead, so to speak, sliding ahead in the final run to take the gold.
Bill, what's your response to that? The Americans coming in second.
I think it's terrific. I think it's great. But, you know, I cannot view these Olympics or any other Olympics, strictly from a red, white, and blue point of view. I appreciate the wonderful things that these people do. There was a gymnast from the Netherlands who performed in London when I was present at the Olympic Games there, and it was the single greatest performance I saw.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way. I see some of these snowboarders coming down the hill, and I don't really care what bib color they're wearing or which country they're representing. As far as I'm concerned, they're making magical things happen on the slope, and it's glorious to see.
The gloriousness of it is amazing. And Shira, let me ask you, because there's something about the course there at the sliding center that, you know, has received a lot of attention, and I'd love to get your sort of first eye view of it. And that is that, you know, it was designed to actually have some slower sections, some uphill sections.
Yes.
Has that had, this was in light of the death that happened to in the 2010 Vancouver Games, but has that had an effect on the quality of the sledding or racing we've seen this year?
It has not had an effect on the quality of the racing. What it has had an effect on is how technically prepared the drivers have to be. I mean, this is not a course where you can just get a good start, go, and kind of loosely guide the sled. This is a course that really, really requires a lot of attention to detail, a lot of technical know-how on the part of the bobsled pilots. And that's actually kind of what tripped up USA 1 in their final run. They sort of bumped along during turns 2 and 3 and didn't have the smoothest ride. So while they had one of the fastest starts, and actually yesterday set a course record for their start time, their lack of smoothness during the turns and during some of the more technical portions of the track cost them the gold.
Mm. Now, Bill, there's another aspect of the women's bobsled this year that's got a lot of attention, and it's an interesting story to me because it sort of is the confluence of athleticism, the business of sport, the business of broadcast, etc., and that is the fact that former U.S. Olympic hurdler Lolo Jones is a pusher. Is that the right term?
That's the right term.
Okay,
pusher, brakeman.
Brakeman for the U.S. number 3 team. She's become a bobsledder. She became a bobsledder this year and was chosen, and controversially, and I'll say this in quotes, over some other more established women's bobsledders.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that she wasn't exactly unestablished. I mean, she's been at this for some time. It's probably also fair to say that the people making these choices have publicity in mind, as everybody involved in commercial sports does. So it doesn't bother me a whole lot. I'm sure that it happens. I'm sure that these picks are sometimes determined by something other than absolute athletic ability.
But let me ask you, Bill, you just said like 2 minutes ago that you loved seeing the gloriousness of athletes at their peak.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a case where maybe we're not seeing the peak athletes for this team.
It's not like she fell down, you know, or pushed backwards. She was a perfectly confident performer in the sport in which she was performing. They didn't win. They didn't get a medal, but she didn't embarrass herself. And I certainly don't have the expertise to know whether she was the absolute best pick for somebody to get that sled started down the chute.
Now, Shira, I understand that you've spoken with Lolo Jones recently. How is she taking all this scrutiny?
She's taking it well. I mean, she is an enthusiastic, ebullient athlete, and she really was there, as she said, for the team, to support Team USA. She finished, I believe, 11th And she was there, you know, she said, to just cheer her teammates on. And she seemed to really be embracing the team aspect of bobsled, which is a lot different than the individual aspect of being an Olympic hurdler. And she was teary-eyed talking about the accomplishments of her teammate, Lauren Williams, who is also a Summer Olympian, who was in USA 1, pushing USA 1, and won the silver medals. And, you know, Lauren Williams now has a gold from the Summer Olympics, a silver from the Summer Olympics, and a silver now from the Winter Olympics. And talking about that, Lolo got quite emotional.
Well, we've got a couple callers here who want to join us. Jerry's calling from Attleboro. You're on the air, Jerry.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I haven't heard much about that goal that was fall back on the Russians, and I frankly thought that was unfair. I spoke to a Boston College hockey player who said that he was very surprised that the goal was called back. And in my opinion, our goalie actually moved the net. And I don't think it had any bearing on whether it was a goal or it wasn't. So what are the Russians saying, and what do you guys think?
Shira, do you have a thought on that?
What are the Russians saying? Well, of course the Russians saying it should have been allowed. I mean, this was, you know, the big scandal of the game so far. Forget, you know, the controversies about, you know, gay rights and all of the Putin-related drama. This was, you know, all they were talking about in the wake of that game. And quite bitterly, they were very upset with the call for obvious reasons. That's been the mood here. Obviously, I think probably different from where you're standing, Mercedes.
Yeah, I think the important thing is the ending of this story, which is that however you feel about that particular call and that particular game, it was not the U.S. that knocked Russia out of the Olympics. It was Finland.
No.
And in the Olympics, the way it's set up, you have your preliminary rounds, and then you have your elimination rounds going for the medal. And you got to go through good teams to get to the finals. You got to go through good teams to play for the gold medal. And Russia faced a good team in Finland, and they didn't go through them. And that's really what that comes down to.
Let's take another call here. Will is calling from Waltham. You're on the air, Will.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
So here's my favorite moment by far, and I might get a little of a clamp just talking about it.
It's what the Olympics are for.
I spent a lot of time up in the Franconia area, and while I don't know Bodie personally, I know a lot of friends of Bodie's, and seeing him break down and in his wife's arms, winning that medal, that was the highlight of the whole Olympics for me.
Yeah.
The low point of the Olympics was 7 minutes ago on your show, when you ruined it for me, Bill, because I was really looking forward to seeing how Ligety did in the GM.
They warned you at the beginning.
We told you to plug your ears, Will.
And besides, I wasn't the first person to announce how well he had done. That was Shira over there in Sochi. All I did was pick up the beat.
I didn't say anything about Bodie. I said only about
Ligety, though.
Well, Will, we are sorry. We did issue ample warning, but thank you so much for your call, and I hope it's not totally, totally ruined for you.
Yeah, next time when I listen to your show, I'll do it with my fingers and my ears.
Great picture. I love it.
Will, thank you so much for your call. Actually, I wanted to Will's call brings up an interesting point for me personally. When I was in London last week, I watched a lot of the games, but they broadcast everything live over there. There was no tape delay at all. And we are living in a world, and this really matters for major sporting events, where, you know, like on Twitter, online, on my phone, even on NBC's Olympic coverage online, you can find out the scores at any time. I mean, this whole idea of waiting until prime time seems a little antiquated to me.
Yeah, I think it's built on the television habits of a U.S. audience, which is nothing important happens until after 7 o'clock. it is antiquated. I agree. We live in an age where information travels much more quickly than that. So, there have been all sorts of suggestions about ways that the Olympics might be better presented in the event that the time, you know, there's such a gap between where they're happening and where people are viewing them. And it'll be very interesting to see going forward whether any of the networks who have the opportunity to do the broadcasts take advantage of any of those suggestions.
Well, as we wrap up, Shira, you're there in Sochi. Just quickly tell us, what has been your favorite moment so far?
God, that's a tough one. I would have to say probably, you know, this will sound a bit odd, but watching the women's giant slalom in the rain. I mean, it was miserable conditions, but it just sort of was one of those Olympic moments where, you know, you're huddled around an athlete and she's talking about her performance and she says it was, you know, awesome and spectacular. This was, you know, 18-year-old Michaela Schifrin, the new phenom of U.S. skiing. And you could just feel sort of the Olympic spirit, even though it was a completely disastrous day weather-wise. It was just fun to be there and share in her enthusiasm for the event and the moment and to recognize, you know, that's what it's all about. These young athletes do, you know, living out their dreams. And even if it's pouring rain and the ski and the snow, as one skier said, feels like it, you're skiing on sugar, it's still the best times of their lives. And you get to be witness to that and talk to them right afterwards. And that was sort of kind of a strange Olympic moment, but a really fun one to be part.
The word glory and glorious again comes up. Shira Springer for the Boston Globe reporting from Sochi at the Olympic Games and staying up late for us. Shira, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Always a pleasure to have you. Spoilers or not.
A pleasure for me as well, Magna. Thank you.
Well, stay with us because coming up, we'll talk about a new type of gap year. I'm Magna Chakrabarty with Carrie Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.